Welcome to Fallen Heroes, a novel written by Barry Nugent and narrated by David Ault. Chapter 3.
Humans will never learn. With each generation, their need for mastery over each other grows, as does the desire to control Mother Nature. They ache to break her spirit and harness her essence as if it were their birthright. They surround themselves with objects they believe will make their insignificant lives rich and productive. I almost pity them. All these objects have done is dull their senses and erode their imagination. Instead of strengthening their will to strive forward, it pulls them back, making them lazy and content, thus making my task all the easier to accomplish. Perhaps if they understood the fleetingness of life, they would waste less of it trying to prove their superiority, and instead simply live. I sit and watch the house as I am perched on the highest branches of an oak tree. I wonder what the people inside are doing, what they are thinking. I wonder if they know they are moments away from death, and what they would do with that knowledge. I drop to the ground, taking care to make no sound. In front of me is a security fence. On the other side, two armed men stand guard at the entrance to the house. I could enter the house unnoticed if I wished, but I will not deprive these men of the joy I bring them. How could I deny them the exquisite sensation of watching the lifeblood flow from their bodies, to feel it congeal in their throats, seeking to release their souls to the eternal void? I shall not disappoint them. Vaulting into the air, I somersault over the fence with room to spare. As I land, one of the guards glances in my direction, and for a moment, I think this time will be different. The guard, believing he saw nothing, returns to the conversation with his colleague. I move across the soft and warm grass. They do not see me until I am a few feet away. As they behold my beautiful countenance, I see the light of fear in their eyes. They hide their fear well. Good, very good. They are stunned only for a moment before reaching for their weapons. They are fast, and their reactions are almost instant. I am faster, and I strike without thought or concern. When I am done, they lay before me, their faces a twisted and blood-soaked parody of bravery. I watch as their blood flows into the earth and feel nothing but contempt. I know now that the traitors within the house will be no match for me, otherwise they would not need protection. They too will die, except, unlike these men, they already know the reason and the cause of their deaths. Where is the challenge? I ask myself as I enter the darkened house and make my way to the bedroom. My hand tightens around the door. I enter and gaze upon the single female I find there. She lies asleep on the bed, unaware of the delights I bring her. As I approach, the woman's eyes flicker and open. Her piercing screams fill the house as I set about my task. It is then I hear something behind me. The husband bursts into the room, firing in all directions, hoping a stray bullet will save his life. He is wrong. I wait until his ammunition is spent, and then it is my turn. He hears my whispered laughter in his ears as I sever his hand. He had used his wife as the bait to try and trap me. Such treachery should and will be rewarded. When I am done, I leave their remains where they lay and leave the house as silently as I entered. In the distance I can hear police sirens. They do not concern me. The night will always be my ally. It protects me, clothes me within its dark embrace. Now I must return to those who have summoned me forth. But deep down I yearn for the one thing that has eluded me these many years. A challenge. Clancy was relieved to escape the media frenzy that was gathering pace following the destruction of the research center. All of the major Japanese television networks were now covering the disaster. So far, the authorities were saying they believed the explosion was a result of an industrial accident. Clancy had seen this kind of thing before. Someone did not want the real truth revealed, at least for now. An attack on a United Nations facility would no doubt reflect badly on the Japanese government. The collateral damage from the explosion had been higher than anticipated. Clancy put that down to the incompetence of the bargain basement mercenaries he was forced to work with. However, the primary objectives, despite the high body count, had been achieved, and that would have to be enough. Following the usual protocol for this kind of operation, they split into teams of two, each pair tasked with making their own way out of Japan. Clancy and Kelly took the Shinkansen from Tokyo Station to the coastal city of Atami. There were a large number of tourists on the train, which helped to ensure their need for anonymity. Clancy soon realized there was little to be concerned about. The occupants of the crowded train were too busy sending texts on their mobiles, sleeping, or reading to notice anything out of the ordinary. Clancy did not like the fact that their escape route was planned and financed by their employers. He had tried to argue the matter, but the stipulation had been a deal-breaker. His concern was that the route could merely be a means of herding them into a trap, and yet he still accepted the arrangement. Betrayal was a way of life for people like him. Once they reached Atami, they boarded a ferry bound for Izuoshima, one of the islands south of Tokyo. The sea appeared to be in a forgiving mood, and was content to remain calm as the ferry set sail. The sky was cloudless, the air warm and refreshingly clean. In the distance, rising up from the center of the island, Clancy could see a volcano. Surrounded by the forest, it stood like a solemn guardian of rock, steam, and molten lava, scrutinizing all who passed under its shadow. During the trip, Clancy overheard one of the tour guides explaining to his group, 20 or more senior citizens, how Mount Mihara's last eruption in 1986 resulted in the evacuation of the entire island. It was at that point that Kelly voiced his fervent wish that the volcano keep its big, lava-filled mouth shut while they were on the island. After the ferry docked, they hired a car and, following the route mapped out by their employers, drove to the airport without incident. The airport was small, isolated, and suited their needs perfectly. A private jet was fueled and waiting on the airport's single runway. In less than 20 minutes, they were in the air. Both men took turns in sleeping, whilst the other made frequent checks on the cabin crew. Some might label their actions as paranoia, but to Clancy there was nothing paranoid about wanting to stay alive. The flight was uneventful, though long. The plane finally touched down at Urbe Airport just outside Rome. A car was waiting for them as they left the main terminal. Clancy got in the front, beside the driver, with Kelly taking the back seat. They set off towards the center of Rome. The silence of the trip was broken by sporadic Italian outbursts from the driver as he weaved in and out of the busy traffic. A Vespa that narrowly avoided ploughing into the side of the car 20 minutes into the journey earned the bulk of the driver's fury. Clancy had ignored the driver's attempts to make conversation with him. He saw no point talking to a man he was poised to kill at the first hint of betrayal. A conversation, however trivial, would evoke images of family, friends, thoughts that could lead to empathy and encourage hesitation. Clancy had witnessed firsthand, on and off the battlefield, the fatal results of hesitation. The car pulled up outside one of the many large complexes that formed the Esposizione Universale di Roma, the heart of Rome's financial district. As they got out, they were greeted by a nervous, dark-haired man in a grey pinstripe suit, who led them to a small, windowless office situated on the building's third floor. The room was sparse, only containing a desk, two armchairs, a table, and on it, a laptop.
"So, all this way and they couldn't even lay on some food," said Kelly. "Bloody cheapskates."
Clancy ignored the observation. Being hungry was a permanent state of mind for Kelly. Right now, they were about to enter the most dangerous phase of the mission. Getting paid.
"Do you have the disc, Mr. Wallencheck?"
Clancy looked around. Besides the two of them, the room was empty. The voice had seemed to come from nowhere. He stood up, walked over to the right corner of the room, and stared into the smoke alarm attached to the ceiling. Inside the housing of the alarm, he saw a tiny speaker. He guessed if he searched further, he would find a surveillance camera.
"Well, well," said Kelly, joining him. "Someone's been enjoying the show."
"The disc, Mr. Wallencheck. Do you have it?"
"Right here," said Clancy. He took out the case containing the disk and patted it paternally. The laptop's power light came on, the operating system booted up, and seconds later, the laptop's disk drive door slid open.
Insert the disk.
Clancy opened the case, removed the disk, and inserted it into the disk drive. After a while, the screen went black and was followed by the words, "Better luck next time, guys."
"Bastard pulled a switch on us," said Kelly, burying his knife into the table.
"Well, Mr. Wallencheck," said the voice.
"He's good."
"That is not an answer."
"Okay, try this one. If the hand's alive, we can pick up his trail. If not, then the disk is scrap along with the rest of the center. Either way, you win."
"If he learns what's on that disk..."
"Don't waste your time threatening us," said Clancy. "Me and my men, and I mean my men, not those amateurs you stuck me with, can get your disk back. But it's going to cost you double."
"You failed to recover the disk, allowed the thief to escape, and you expect more money?"
"My team don't come cheap. And besides, I was more than happy to put a bullet in the hand," said Clancy. "But no, you wanted to pull all this make-his-death-look-like-an-accident crap."
The voice did not answer, leaving Clancy wondering if he had pushed too hard.
"A fair point, Mr. Wallencheck. Double it is," said the voice at last. "Assemble your team and we will be in contact."
"And the hand?"
"Kill him. Kill him in whatever way you see fit."
That was Chapter 3 of Fallen Heroes. Thanks for listening.
Fallen Heroes is part of the Unseen Shadows transmedia universe. To find out more, visit www.unseenshadows.com.